Good evening. So we're back in the part about hope. Is that right? We've been abandoning hope as we pass through the gates of hell, as Dante did. That's always a shocking aspect of our practice, to hear this about hope and how it drags us into a dream world and keeps us there as long as we're wedded to hoping. Sometimes it becomes useful if there's something so painful that it's unbearable. We try to help people by giving them a little hope. Even though it's a dream, it perhaps in the moment is a helpful dream. But as far as our practice is concerned, understanding our life in terms of the present really takes away the need for hope, because the vitality and the intensity and the beauty of the present real moment is far and above anything that we would get making up a story that's full of hope. It's so odd how we turn away from the way things are. It's so odd how we create this dream. How afraid we are of the actual moment itself. And yet we're living the moment continually. That's all we get. That's all we have. Just this very one moment. So I wonder what you, how it was for you to be entertaining this notion that their hope is unnecessary. Basically, that's the whole thing, is just unnecessary. You don't have to go there. So he says, you give up any possibility of becoming the greatest person in the world by means of your training. So if we train, so-called, and even training is a little odd, I always think. This is some kind of discipline that we have been involved in, or in which we find ourselves, this life discipline that we find ourselves, if we think it's going to make us the greatest person because we're doing this, of course. And I think most people wouldn't even entertain such a notion. Except maybe somebody like Chogyam Trungpa. I think he says things like this because he himself was so ambitious and so such a wild man. He saw through the way that we do things like that, our pride and our ambition, because he had so much of it himself. He says you want to subjugate the world in your own particular style, however subtle and sneaky it may be. Well, speak for yourself, Chogyam. So,
he says, can you read, there's a part towards the end that he says how it, you're trying to kind of fake the Buddha within you to, I think it's towards the end.
You hope to attain enlightenment by some kind of trick. You're tuned into a professional approach and become a professional achiever. So there's the possibility that you might approach practice in the same way, thinking that you can actually con the Buddha mind within yourself and sneakily attain enlightenment.
So that's kind of scary, because, you know, we think, you know, we're doing it kind of. Or is it not to be afraid of, perhaps we might be doing that?
Well, it's a pointer.
How do you know?
I think we know ourselves pretty well. And if we get caught in something like this, usually we get straightened out in some way or another.
I mean, it doesn't work anyway eventually,
no.
Right?
No.
So you know.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to be afraid of.
Not at all. No. It all gets cleared up one way or another.
Right.
Yeah.
And my other thought about faith, you've talked about this many years ago, and, you know, for a while I said, okay, I buy it. And then so it comes up again, and I'm thinking, you know, in my Christian upbringing, it was a big thing, hope. And it is for my parents, too, you know. I mean, it's such a big thing for their well-being. So in a way, I have a lot of respect for it.
Mm-hmm.
And my, for right now, I'm by choice not letting it go. I kind of, the parallel to it is kind of like taking an Advil when you have a headache.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's kind of just to get me by till I kind of, I'm mm-hmm. well, or till I kind of get it. I'm not faking myself here, am I?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It isn't an instruction to throw anything away. It's just seeing through how our mind works.
But I guess I still don't get it.
Well, it's all ideas.
The hope.
The hope is an idea. The not hoping is an idea also.
I mean, you raise your kid, you tell them good values and hope that they have a good life and they understand.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. That kind of hope is it's fixing an intention.
Right.
But that's not the same as the hope that he's talking about, which is hoping for some, attached to the idea that there is something that you can manipulate and maneuver around your life in order to make it go in the way that you want it to go.
Why does he call it hope? That's something else, that's conning, or, you know, not being truthful. I mean,
well, that's what he's talking.
A good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, anybody's going to back me up?
It's like hope for a new car, a hope for a better job, a hope is what she's talking about.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Because it's a drug. It gets you out of the now.
Yeah, what are you actually doing to get that?
Well, what's wrong with working towards a nice car?
That's perfect. With hoping for a nice car and not working for a nice car.
Yeah, but nobody's saying that they're not going to work. I mean, why is he using the word hope? There's so many other words.
There's an attachment to a future result that you can't have. There's no future. It's delusion.
Plus, the risen Jesus Christ. You know, it's like, you know, if you follow that ladder, not that up is a better place than down, but, you know. Anyway, I'll drop it for now. But I just felt I had to put my bit in.
Well, it's a good question. It's a semantic question, for one thing. Mm-hmm. So it's how we understand words. And I think you're right that, of course, we have intentions, things that we want and need. But wanting turns into a grasping that, as you say, is a kind of drug that runs through our whole culture. It's based on the idea that things are all going to get better, and not necessarily.
So I agree with the working and the grasping and, you know, needing.
Sure.
But, yeah, I'm holding on to hope for a while until I get rid of my crutches.
So what are you hoping for?
I hope for everybody to be happy.
Oh, well.
You know, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Is that different from wanting everyone to be happy?
If the wanting follows with, if somebody's not happy, I'm upset, then that's not good. But wishing, maybe I'm looking at it as wishing.
Mm-hmm. That's the basic intention of our practices, wanting everyone to be happy.
Including myself.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's a silly thing. A little part of it I understand, but most of it I just grew up with it, and it saved me so many times.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah.
You know, and I see my parents in their way, it works for them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I had an experience a couple days after we talked last week with despair, and realized that that's really has the same kind of amplitude, I think, as hope. You know, it's the same power in some ways, but just the kind of opposite. Mm-hmm. So despair is like, oh, I'll never get better, or this will never be different, or it'll always be this way, right? It's that kind of story that. Mm-hmm. That you tell yourself. So it helps me to contrast those two. Like, despair feels really familiar, and then to think about hope as a contrast to that. You know, it's more, you're attached to an outcome, but you're saying it's never going to happen. Or you're despairing that some outcome will happen. So. Mm.
Part of the story that we make up about things. Yeah. I have a friend who always expected the worst, because she said then she wouldn't be disappointed if it went badly. But it didn't help her, really. He was kind of a mournful person, because he was always waiting for the worst thing to happen.
And then she was depressed when it didn't. Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Karen, you had something?
There's a couple things. There are certain of these lessons that make me feel like I'll never be a Buddhist. I can only point to them. But what I was thinking about this week with this thought, because it comes up all the time, I hope this or that, and it came up this week because my partner has been away almost ever since I moved here in Washington with her mother, who's been very ill and going in and out of these things. And I was just on the phone with her saying, and wanting to say, I hope, you know, there's an upturn and you can come back. And then I realized, or I was able to recognize lately, that there's something that needs to happen with she and her mother right now, and that just needs to happen. And it could be that, you know, her mother dies, or it could be whatever. I just feel like by trying to say, I can't wait for you to get back here, it's maybe pulling her in a way and not allowing her to be really present with what's happening mm-hmm. there. And also, whatever I am supposed to gain by this time that's sort of alone, that's too something to kind of not hope it away.
Yeah. Not hope it away.
Now there's the hymn. We have this hope. Da, 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 da. I'll get the words.
Okay.
You guys are going to kick me out. Angie's right that the word is used for many, many, many different things. You know, I hope you feel better. And it really, you know, it's just a polite way of saying something. You know, hoping that your children stay well. It's really kind of wishing, or, you know. I think one word gets used in a different way.
Well, to me, it's half that, half faith. And I know it's not the same thing, but in the Christian realm, they're built together. They go together for salvation, which is the salvation of our own brains and minds.
Mm-hmm.
I won't preach anymore.
I think the
hymn came up, so I
it's maybe shifting what you put your faith in. If you maybe are put your faith more in recognizing this moment passes and there's another
right.
moment, and
I'll buy that.
That yeah. we can and the more you know that with a lot of faith, then you can then be
yes.
Yeah, trust.
That too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's one thing to experience Buddha nature. It's another thing to trust it.
Yes. Yes. And that's what he's pointing to here. Yeah. That's conning.
You can't con Buddha nature.
You can't con Buddha nature. Just won't let it happen.
So that means our suffering is coming from the lack of experience of the Buddha nature. If we experience it, it's no words, you know, it's there rather than why am I
yes.
Suffering is due to attachment. I've heard that somewhere.
Well, attachment is the magic word.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Jeffrey?
I was a very poor student of hope in terms of thinking about it or contemplating it. I spent, after hearing that Keogh and Carlson had passed, I spent a lot of time just contemplating him. And reflecting on my time with another Sangha and many of the issues that came up regarding Dharma Rain, Jiyokenneth Roshi, and what continues to play out with him. Kind of seeing where all of that sort of fits and everything. We all have our own compass. You know, in a sense, every one of us has a different karma. Come to this, we have a discussion here, but from which all of us have. We've walked through that door with a whole set of experiences. And so one of my delusions is that I'm in the November of my life, you know, and that I have much to do in November and December. And then I'm reading about this man who's 3 years younger than I am, and how he's going to Orioki and just collapses and has a massive heart attack. And, for that moment, I just switch positions.
Uh-huh.
And at Shasta, they had a very common saying of time flies like an arrow shot from a bow. And it was always our... when we talk about impermanence, that was our way of talking about it. So, just sort of the deep reflection about how quickly all this takes place. And I'd say what little hair I had on top of my hair caught on fire a little stronger over this past week, realizing, you know, that once again somebody's passed.
I got to make
really good use of my time. And so those Novembers and Decembers are not promised us. That's where I was this past week.
Well, I was too. It was the same shock that we went through when Coben died. He's alive one moment and he just falls right off the edge of life and is gone. Bam, just like that. And it's such a shock. And the listserv, there's just one comment after another, just dozens and dozens and dozens of grieving people all writing about him and what a remarkable teacher he was. And what an amazing loss that it happens like this. Not even time to say goodbye. So were you at Shasta at the same time they were?
They were, yes, they were there. And when I say I was at Shasta, that meant that I was going up for, you know, sessions and things like that. I didn't get to know them personally at all. But of course, the falling out that they had with Shasta was all the, what would you call it, all the talk in the priories and in the smaller groups of which I belonged to one down here. And, there's just so much, there's so much suffering from all that stuff. It's been ongoing now for over 25 years. And, anyway, I started thinking about how long I've been doing this. Want to make it fresh. Make it new.
Well, it is new
every day.
Every day. Get up and start over.
Yeah.
best part. There's always another day until there isn't.
So I guess I did have an experience that was maybe hope and intention at the same time. It was very, very bizarre because normally, you know, unusual stuff doesn't happen. But I had the opportunity to introduce two people who, just by complete happenstance, that and one was interested in the other. I became enormously fixated on them getting together. This thing in the world. And I did things about it. I mean, I told one of them that the other was interested, you know, like doing the whole, like, yen thumbing. And, but I couldn't get out of my head. Like what he said and what she said, and are they going to get together, and they should get together. And it was like, I was crazy, just crazy, crazy. So that's where, like, hope can kind of be
that's
nuts,
fine.
Right?
That's
no,
great.
No, I'm sitting there meditating at the wall and thinking about this.
But something else is going to be in your mind anyway, so what's wrong with that one?
I don't know. It was just too much energy. Too much energy going on. Hoping that they would get together. And if they do, they do. And if they don't, they don't. You know,
right.
It's not,
so that's...
I've done my thing and I step back.
Now the question is, are you asking for commission? You know, that's the thing. Where are you going to be upset if the commission didn't come back to you?
But, you know,
I think it's
great.
Can you imagine what their children would look like?
No, I didn't. That's really hope. Then it'll turn to despair because they won't get together and I'll be like, I shall never find someone, you know? So that's kind of what I meant by the drama part of it, you know, that the hope can really be high and then the despair can really be low, and, you know, you try to find something. But I'll let you know, stay tuned. There may be a first date. Well, I'm hoping for that.
Well, it's almost 8, so we should talk a little bit about the next one, which is the avoiding poisonous food, which is a little odd, but no odder than the rest of it, really. It's about practicing egolessness. And he's pointing to how that can become another ego trip, that we can be apparently dropping the ego, and another way of conning the Buddha. Our Buddha nature is being so pure and perfectly egoless that we're doing it all over again from another angle. So if it's just a way of building up your ego to feel like you're egoless, then you haven't lost it at all. So self-consciousness, building up a proud story about oneself. If your reason for sitting or doing practice of any other kind is self-improvement, that it's like eating poisonous food, it's not going to help you. So it's very well to remember that we don't have to judge ourselves one way or the other. Of course we do. We're always comparing ourselves to others. We're always judging our success or failure in how we're managing our way through life. And all of that is a very big waste of energy, a very big waste of our time. It's all that being caught up in one's own imaginary life and missing out on the real life that's happening at the same time. So this, it's a funny metaphor, poisonous food, but it's interesting because truly there isn't any personal achievement in this practice. We don't practice in order to get a gold star of any kind. We practice to free ourselves of all those expectations, all those ambitious ideas for ourselves. And actually, forgetting to wish everyone to be happy. So it's pointing to what nourishes us is that wish that Samya brought up. The wishing for all to be happy is what nourishes us. That's not poisonous food. So this points to how we comport ourselves and just notice how we self-judge continually, feeling like we don't fit, feeling like we do fit in some kind of superior way, or all the different trips that we play on ourselves, and just see it clearly. It's not a bad thing, it's not a good thing, it's just a thing that gets in the way of our wishing all well. So seeing it, we see it's not there, it's not a problem. It's really not a problem at all. We can drop it. Okay. Can you do it?
I'd like to make some announcements.
Good.
So we did set a date for the business meeting. It's going to be October 7th, which I think is 2 weeks from tonight. And then following that, there is a full day sit on the 11th. And next month, we also traditionally have a food drive and a sagaki ceremony. Kind of during Halloween week. So we'll have more details about that.
Yeah.
I have something to share. I know a lot of people here like poetry, and I don't know if anybody's familiar with the whole online course phenomena. But Robert Pinsky from Boston University, who was the poet laureate under the Clinton administration, I believe, is teaching a class on one of these online courses under the edX. It's called EVX, Course Management System. And it's based on the favorite poem project that he did, where he went around the country and had people, ordinary people, reading poetry. And so I think it's somehow related to that, or the course materials are related to that. So it starts September 30th, and it's free. Okay. Thank you very much. For, you know, the former poet laureate.
Where do you find it?
I think if you, the course is called The Art of Poetry, and then his name, of course, if you look that up on the internet, and EDX, EDX is the organization from Harvard, MIT, and Boston.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
Hosting the course, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it looks like it should be interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
On Sunday?
Super.
Maybe I'll find some love poems.
I'm sure.
Just don't go for anything.
No way.